Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening. My next guest is Nicole Biscotti. She is an educator who believes that everyone should have access to a quality education that connects them with their purpose. She seeks to bridge understanding, spark conversations, and inspire through her writing. She is an EduMatch author, co-founder of the Edu Table, and leads global ADHD Twitter chats at ADHD Global Convo, hashtag ADHD. She and her family live in Phoenix, but she's moving to Yuma, Arizona. She is currently a Spanish teacher in a public high school. She's also a certified translator and interpreter. Welcome to the podcast, Nicole.
Hi, and thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here today.
Well, we talked a lot in the pre-chat about your story, your background growing up, and a little bit about how you were in the trenches growing up and how you became an educator later in life after you were a translator and interpreter for a while. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes, absolutely. My path to education was not a linear path at all. I didn't become a public high school teacher until I was 38 years old. Although looking back, I always had a love of education. I was a terrible student for most of my life, but very bright and loved to read. I just didn't necessarily want to follow what was going on in the classroom, maybe. And there were some other issues that I was definitely dealing with. Similarly to our students today, you know, that are dealing with broken homes and different transitions and things like that. So I did not have a linear path to education, but it is my passion. I believe that education can bridge people to their purpose and provide them the access to live their lives in a way that is representative of what they care about and what their talents are. So I'm happy to be an educator now, even though it took me a little bit longer to get here.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about what got you interested in teaching Spanish, since you've been working with people using your Spanish language skills in interpretation and in interpretation and translation, and how did that carry over to teaching Spanish?
Sure, I was a freelance interpreter and translator in many different settings since about 1998, off and on. So I definitely had extensive experience with that and a love of the language and travel. And then for a while, when I lived in Jacksonville, Florida, I had a language school called Bilingual Advantage. But when I separated from my kid's father and I started over, I really had to think a lot about what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to be in education. And then I wanted to also be able to join that with my love and enthusiasm of the Spanish language and the culture. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where the two met, and I became a Spanish teacher.
Mm-hmm. So we talked a lot about, you felt like, your background, your experience came full circle. The fact that you are of Puerto Rican descent and now you're teaching kids in Arizona who are mostly heritage learners. Talk to me a little bit about the experience teaching those heritage learners.
Yes, so at the school, I'm actually in transition, so I'm going to a new school next year. But at the school that I was at for the past 6 years, I was teaching primarily heritage speakers, which are, they're kids that grew up speaking Spanish, at home. We call it kitchen Spanish because it's speaking Spanish without ever learning about the vocabulary, like higher level vocabulary, or having the literacy skills or the grammar and the structural knowledge of the language. So it's really fun and it's really powerful because you take kids that are first generation immigrants and or children of immigrants, and they have a skill that's so employable and so empowering, and you take it and you teach them just a little bit more about the Spanish language, and before you know it, they're confident making presentations in a professional setting and can take that knowledge to either get college credit through the AP exam or to just be able to use in their community in the workplace. So it's a different way of teaching Spanish because they're not necessarily learning or acquiring the language. They're kind of filling in the gaps of their knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so you've helped those kids learn a lot about the larger picture of Hispanic culture as well, not only in countries in South America and Central America, but also in Europe. So it kind of opens those kids' eyes to kind of what's outside just their own area in Arizona, correct?
Yeah, and that's been a lot of fun for me as well, because so I'm originally from New York City and I'm part Puerto Rican. So my experience of speaking Spanish was originally more around Caribbean speakers. And then as I traveled, I went to South America a few times. And, you know, in New York, you have a lot of diversity. So I was able to really expand on my personal kind of horizons of that. And then when I moved to Arizona, I lived here as a kid off and on, but when I came back as an adult and, you know, really plugged into the community and started working here a little bit later in life, it's interesting because I'm very close to the Mexican border. I'm actually going to be, I'm moving this right now to Yuma, and I'll be a half an hour from the Mexican border. But even here in Phoenix, I'm about 3.5 hours away. Mm-hmm. And so primarily the heritage speakers that I'm working with are of Mexican descent. However, Mexico is an enormous country. Mm-hmm. There's several states and regions. And it's been really fun because I can teach the kids about some of the other cultural experiences that I've had and the different accents and the different influences in terms of religion and language from in the other countries. And they've taught me a lot about the different Mexican states and regions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're both learning from each other, and that's great to acquire that knowledge from your kids. Quite a different you know, way of just using your language skills as opposed to that translation and interpretation background that you had. So, you know, I've done a lot of language teaching myself for French and a little bit of interpretation and translation, but you know, I've seen it more from that, you know, cultural lens where you're teaching about the countries where the language is spoken, but not so much yes. heritage. You know, I'm teaching, when I've taught French, it's mostly just beginners, you know, so.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you're seeing it from that lens of kids that know, you know, the kitchen Spanish and filling in the gaps. So a lot of our pre-chat dealt also with your experience working with students with ADHD and how you started a Twitter chat, and you have a book about ADHD coming up. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yes, thank you. So I just wanted to say that I knew absolutely nothing about ADHD. I have almost 2 master's degrees in education and some doctoral credits. Mm-hmm. I have never read a chapter that I was assigned anywhere about ADHD as a gen ed teacher. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I started teaching at 38. I have 4 kids. My oldest son, the day I started teaching, it was his first day of high school. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I thought I was pretty experienced with being around kids. But my oldest son is very compliant, and then so are my twin daughters in school. And then I had little Jason, my youngest, who is not compliant and in fact does have ADHD. But at the time, I didn't know what was going on. And I just really, it was a very, Jason now turned 10, but it's been a very intense journey as a mother and then as an educator, because I can never stop, you know, I can never turn off the mom in me, and I can never turn off the teacher. Mm-hmm. And just learning from both sides, and first of all, really realizing how ignorant I was personally about ADHD and about the needs for support. So it's really been a very big learning journey for me. And as I started writing and blogging about it, I started to realize that other teachers had the same situation or very similar situations, and that they hadn't received very much education or experience. And if they didn't have any personal experience, often we have kids in our class that honestly, we don't know how to meet their needs very well. Mm-hmm. So just, you know, there's obviously not one answer to that. There's many answers, but just as I've learned different strategies and in conversations with my son and now in my practice as a teacher as well, just sharing that. And really, I started the hashtag ADHD Global Convo because my intention is to really spark conversations. I think this is not something that, you know, take this pill or do this one strategy and it's all going to be great. This is definitely a communication between educators and students and parents. It's definitely an ongoing conversation.
What's some of the feedback that you've gotten from those parents during those Twitter chats?
It's interesting because most of my followers are educators, but I do have some parents reach out to me as well. And I enjoy both interactions because I obviously can relate on both sides. The book is actually, the first one is going to be more teacher facing with classroom strategies. And the second one is going to be written more directly to parents. And I think one thing that's really been interesting to me is to see the power in my willingness to be vulnerable and transparent about some of the things that have happened. It's neat to see that parents feel empowered to speak to me and say, you know, I kind of thought like because you were a teacher that you would know better, or, you know, like the teacher would know. So just kind of breaking down that barrier for everyone to realize that kind of none of us know, and we're all just learning. Mm-hmm. Because there really isn't, if we look around us, there aren't very many successful models of ADHD instruction going on, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. And have you been able to observe any instructors where you've worked that you would say have really met the needs of ADHD students, or is everybody learning? Is there always something to figure out how to better serve those students?
I have learned a lot from the special education teachers mm-hmm. where I was working. I gravitated towards them. I would ask them a million questions. I was probably annoying, but they were all very gracious. And I learned a lot about, because unfortunately in education, we're largely still in silos, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so we have SPED teachers that have more training with ADHD and know how to better support these kids. And then we kind of have the gen ed high school teachers. Mm-hmm. So I always tried to be closer to the SPED teachers and work with them and learn from them.
Mm-hmm. And tell me a little bit about the title of your book and when you expect that to be published.
So the funny thing about writing a book that I didn't know is that the title is actually usually developed at the end. Mm-hmm. So I had a title in mind, but after it goes through all the processes that it's going through with EduMatch, then I guess we discuss the title at the end.
Okay.
So that's interesting. And I think it'll be exciting to see kind of what it, you know, it becomes, if it's something close to what I originally thought or something totally different. But I think it'll be out towards the end of fall, maybe winter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I submitted it, but I know it takes about 6-7 months for the editing and the focus group and all that to happen.
Okay, so we'll keep an eye out for that. Tell me a little bit about your EduTable. What can people expect if they go to hashtag EduTable?
Thank you. So Melissa Sidebotham and I came up with this idea that, you know, in conversations, she approached me and about how to better reach parents, and we started to have conversations, and we realized that there's this like amazing EduTwitter community of teachers out there, and it's invigorating, and we all learn from each other, and we share ideas, and we support one another, and it's really a game changer if you're an educator. And then we started to think about, well, what would happen if we had that same level of communication with parents? Not just like, you know, I'm going to bring you to the parent-teacher conference, and it's kind of like a structured conversation or a presentation, really, but like actually real conversations. Mm-hmm. So then we were like kind of kicking that around, and we came up with this idea of like, well, what if we invited parents to the table? Mm-hmm. What would that look like? And that's where we came up with this concept of the EduTable, which is, we have a website, theedutable.com, mm-hmm. and it has a bunch of authentic and original content from different educators and parents, different articles, different videos of things that they're sharing. And then we also have a podcast where we have conversations, and our conversations always include a panel of parents and educators.
And is that podcast linked on the website?
It is, yes.
Okay. And a lot of that is being published now in the summer. People can access a lot of these conversations and resources already?
Yes, it's all on the edutable.com.
Okay.
And then the EduTable podcast. And we're also on Twitter as well.
Okay.
And Instagram and Pinterest and Facebook. We're everywhere.
Okay. So I'll definitely put that in the show notes for people to check out. Out of everything we talked today about today on the podcast, what's something in particular you want people to remember about your work and about working with kids with ADHD and maybe teaching Spanish, heritage Spanish learners.
My work is really all about bridging understanding. Mm-hmm. I feel that if I can spark conversations that get people to collaborate authentically and to bridge understanding and to better support kids, that's where it's at.
Mm-hmm. Great. It was so fun chatting with you today and learning more about your work. If people want to follow you, your site in particular, where can they find you online?
Thank you. And thank you very much for having me. I really, really appreciate this opportunity. I have a website. It's NicoleBiscotti.com. Mm-hmm. Biscotti is spelled just like the cookie. And then my Twitter handle is @BiscottiNicole.
Okay. I'll put that in the show notes as well. Well, thank you so much for being on the Out of the Trenches podcast. Have a great day.
You as well. Thank you again for having me.